Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview with actor, singer, dancer, Howie Kay, who is currently part of the ensemble company in the production of Tom Jones, which is playing at Florida Studio Theater. Howie's story is interesting because it seems that at every turn, someone was there telling him what he ought to do, and it turned out that they were right. It's curious. Hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from no. Says, oh, all on tap. Oh, I really can. Oh, I really can. Turn down all the noise, so
hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about becoming who you really are. In the event that, like so many of us, you were discouraged from being all that you are somehow in your childhood. I often talk about the impact of the family on who we become, and it's not rocket science. We all know that the family is our laboratory where we discover everything, really, you know, who we are, what we can do, what we can't do, what other people are like, what we can expect, what the world is about. We go out into the world with a very definite picture of what we can expect, even though the picture that we get in our family is likely not to resemble the picture out in the world. So the family is a major factor in our deciding what it is safe for us to demonstrate and what it is not safe for us to demonstrate. And the family, of course, has many, many ways of letting us know that this behavior and this way of being and this idea and this plan are not okay. But the family is in no way the only place where we are constrained. School can constrain us. The teachers have a tremendous impact on how children feel about themselves, what they think it's okay for them to do and not do. And I talk about that a lot because it comes up in the interviews that I do, and it comes up in this interview as well, the one that you're going to hear today with actor, singer, dancer, charmer, Howie Kay. In Howie's case, as in the case of many people that I have interviewed, teachers helped. Teachers identified skills, behaviors, ways of being that the child and his family did not know about, didn't recognize, were not attuned to, and so could not encourage. And you'll hear Howie talk about it, and if you've been listening to my interviews, you've heard other people talk about it, that a parent will say, wow, you know, you're a good writer, or, you know, I think that you could be a good public speaker. Why don't you get up here and speak to the class? Or, boy, you move great. I'll bet you make a good dancer. And these people have gone on to believe this and make a life of this quality, this skill, this talent that they would not have known they had, because nobody in their family saw it, understood it, was sensitive to it, and they didn't recognize it in themselves. So teachers can do that, but teachers can also do the opposite. Teachers can make fun of, talk down to, embarrass, either intentionally or not. And when that happens, it is, of course, the opposite of what I was just describing. Instead of flowering with this new idea of oneself, children collapse into themselves. They say, that quality, that movement that I did, that was embarrassing, that was ugly, I can't do that anymore. Or, I thought, you know, that I had something really clever to say when I stood up in front of the audience, but my teacher, you know, said that it wasn't. So maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, and I won't do that again. Or that picture that I drew, my teacher said, you know, those are the wrong colors to use in this place, so I'm not going to draw anymore. This not only happens with talent and skill, but it can happen with what you look like, it can happen with what your voice sounds like, or, you know, an interest that you have. So, if you think that you were discouraged in some way in your childhood from being the person that you would naturally have been, then the Lynn Show is about saying it's not too late. It's not too late to get yourself back. And getting yourself back is a valuable thing to do. And one of the ways that I demonstrate how it can be valuable to have your whole self is by playing interviews with people who make their living or their life with an art, like the interview I'm about to play for you with Howie Kay. As I just said, Howie had pointed out to him that he had skill as a performer and later as an actor by clever, sensitive, talented teachers. When you listen to Howie and when you listen to the other people who I've interviewed who make their living or their life with an art, you hear what it sounds like to be who you really are, to be in sync with yourself. It doesn't mean that the life you've chosen, and you'll hear Howie talk about this, is necessarily the easiest life, but it is the right life. And when you hear that, it is my hope that you will be inspired to attempt to recover whatever you might have lost, so you too can be living your real life. If you want to learn more about that, how it's done, you can go to my website, thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. I'm not going to talk anymore now because this was a fairly long interview and I really didn't want to cut any of it. It's interesting and it's instructive. So without any more from me, here is Howie Kay. Okay, so I'm here with Howie Kay in the rehearsal space at Florida Studio Theater, and I'm interviewing Howie because he is part of the ensemble cast of the production of Tom Jones, which is currently being run at Florida Studio Theater. And he, I think, has the most challenging role in the show.
I'll take that. I'll take oh my God, I mean, the energy that it requires to do what you're doing in that show is remarkable, don't you think?
It's been a process trying to figure him out, and because he's a loud mouth guy.
Right.
He thinks and he speaks, and it's always loud.
Yeah, no, it's true.
There's nothing subtle about him, which is fun to play characters that are just out there and loud and kind of obnoxious in a way. But he thinks with half a brain, you know, and just says what he feels. But it's an enjoying thing. I just did a little Facebook exchange with the writer, saying how much fun it is to play this character.
Oh, how nice.
Because you get it out. You know?
Oh, God, yes. It's yeah. Okay, so I want to talk more about the show.
Great.
But I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
That's me.
That is definitely you.
I do. And I don't know how I do it, but I still do it.
Well, I think it's difficult to do.
It's very hard.
I think it's very hard to do. Yeah. I think in this culture, we don't honor artists, so it's really difficult to do. I ask one question. I'm assuming that when we talk about the art to which you are giving your life, it is acting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. So my question is, can you recall the very first time in your life when it occurred to you that you liked being looked at on stage, applauded, that what would come to be actor appealed to you, or?
That's a very easy question
to
answer, because the bug, being bit by the bug, is, sometimes we call it the theater bug. Not the movies, not the TV bug, not that. I was touched by theater at a very young age, and I was lucky enough I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, which is not the most glamorous of places, nor the most artistic of places,
right.
But this was early 70s,
mm-hmm.
And there was, the Cincinnati public school system was offspringing a new alternative educational program.
Mm-hmm.
And one of these was an arts academy, an art school, by audition, but it was just starting, so it was very, very small. And I had parents that were open-minded and let me get involved.
Okay, wait a second.
Yeah.
How old are you here?
At this point?
Eleven.
11.
Okay, so now...
Which is when I joined Actors Equity Association.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so I really went to an audition at 11 years old and got the role. Over everybody else.
And in an equity production?
It was an equity production of Peter Pan.
Okay, wait.
Oh, we're not getting to that.
No,
okay.
No, I want to go back.
Okay, good.
What I want to know is, if you were already considering, thinking about doing auditions at 11, what happened at 4 or 5 or 6 that...
Lynn, I can tell you I had a teacher.
Yeah.
In my elementary school, who was a music teacher,
mm-hmm.
and must have heard something, or seen something, or both, that made him say, "Hey, would you like to be a part of this all-city boys choir?" Because I was pre the voice change, so there was in Cincinnati again. There was a city boys choir that performed at Reds games for it's a pretty corporate. Procter & Gamble, they do events. It was three kids from each school. So I joined this All-City Boys Choir from my little area, Roselawn Elementary.
Okay, wait.
Yeah, yeah.
You must have been singing.
I was singing in the class.
In the music class.
Yeah, and then...
But before that,
no,
you don't remember nothing. It was just that you were in this music class,
yeah.
So you had to sing in the music class.
Exactly.
And this guy said, you should probably be in this.
Will you go represent our school in this all
Cincinnati? Were you surprised?
I don't remember if I was surprised.
It was pretty...
But it intrigued me.
Yeah.
And I was...
You went.
I went. Oh, I went. And that began, the people involved with the Cincinnati Boys Choir then were involved with putting the School for Creative Performing Arts together.
Oh.
So it was a natural progression to go from there. And I left my little elementary school. It was courageous. They were courageous and open-minded parents that said, hey, you know what? We're going to give our child's life over to an arts training program at such a young age, are you going to teach them to add? Are they going to know how to diagram a sentence? You know, there are all those questions, humanities and social studies
right.
But it was, you know, it was very well thought out, and the school is thriving, you know, to this day.
Well, wait.
Yeah.
Are either of your parents?
I never had a nano ounce of it.
That is so amazing, don't you think? Okay, so.
So I'm in school.
Yeah, I just want to make this point again. I make this point every time it comes up. The impact that teachers can have on people, on students.
I believe in it.
You know, I mean, well, this teacher changed your life.
I yes.
You know, this teacher took you from wherever it was you were on your way to and put you on a trajectory that led you to your life's work.
That teacher, coincidentally, is still in my life.
Really?
And we live in New York City, 5 blocks away, and I see him coming and going from the dry cleaners and the grocery, and we've known each other truly since I was in the fourth grade.
Right.
Uh-huh. He's a wonderful man, and creative and talented. He plays, he's a musical director for Phantom on Broadway, so.
Oh!
But he's a great man, so yeah, I believe in teaching. I'm not a teacher. Everyone always said that I should be or would be, but I haven't yet because I'm still doing it.
Yeah.
I've always said as long as I'm getting hired to do jobs.
Fine, this is what you do.
In my chosen profession, this is still what I do. I happen to be a man of a certain age now, and as we were talking about earlier, it's much harder to make a living. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's nearly impossible unless you have an HBO series or you make movies. A theater career is... It's tough these days.
I know. But let me take you back in.
All right, yeah.
You're 11.
I'm 11, yeah.
Yeah, you're 11, and you're in this thing.
I book a job.
Yeah, right.
I booked a job.
And then you're an actor, essentially.
I was a child actor. I really was. I remember preparing an audition and going to it.
This one that got you the
but
job?
But I don't
what
remember,
show?
Like, it was Peter Pan.
Oh, right, you said.
This was when Sandy Duncan was first...
Right.
First came to the role before she did it on Broadway. She did there was a national tour of it. Again, God love Ohio. There was a producer. He's not around anymore. He lived to be 103 years old. His name was John Kenley. When you're bored at home, because you're a theater woman, right?
Right?
You should know what John Kenley is, because he lived a fantastic life from vaudeville. Because I said he lived to be 103 or 104 years old and died probably within the past 5 years.
Wow.
Old, and also was not secretly a hermaphrodite. But he lived half the year in Florida, and I don't know where exactly in Florida, I used to know, half the year in Florida and half the year in Ohio where he produced summer theater. He was the original producer that started putting stars, TV movie stars, into theatrical vehicles and touring in his circuit. He owned 5 theaters here, there, in Ohio. He had one in Michigan. He would sell his productions to other producers.
Yeah.
He would put Burt Reynolds in 7 Brides for 7 Brothers. He would put Imogen Coco. I mean, he has supposedly written a book that ultimately might come out one day. They were waiting until he died because supposedly there's a lot of controversy. But he engaged all, do John Kenley on the Google. You're going to get masses of material. Anyway, he was producing this Peter Pan. He put Sandy Duncan with Peter Pan.
Wow.
And I played the role of John, darling, and I got to fly with her, and I remember meeting her, I remember meeting him, and John Kenley, who again, I came to meet later on in my life, and he gave me more jobs as a young person, as a teenager, an older teenager, so I worked for John a number of times, and he offered equity roles, paid equity salary, and he was so old school, you wouldn't get your contract until you got to his office in Warren, Ohio? I can't even remember now, but he would pull out the equity contract, put it in a typewriter, type in your name and your salary, and you would start rehearsals. So old school, you know, it's never done like that anymore, but. So there I was, I got this role, I toured without my family.
Okay, wait.
Yeah.
This is so interesting to me.
Right?
No, it's so interesting. I mean, here we have a little boy who is just a little boy doing little boy stuff.
Yeah.
And a teacher says, gee, it sounds like you should be in this choir.
Yeah.
And then you're in the choir. And then did you auditioned for this role? Did you have the, I mean, what made you audition for the role?
It was, they took a bunch of us. You know, there were a bunch of boys that went. They took.
They took. You didn't say, I want to audition.
No, I was kind of picked. I was picked.
Yet again.
Yeah, like five of us. I think there were five of us. We went to Pittsburgh. I think it was Pittsburgh.
Oh, my God. And so they take you. They pick you up and they take you. They keep picking you up and taking you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
Yeah.
And there you are at 11, a professional actor.
Yeah, it was a good, it was fun. I didn't mind being there. I enjoyed it.
No, I'm quite sure.
Yeah.
You probably didn't know at 11 how big a deal it was that had happened to you.
I had an idea, because once they put a picture of you in the newspaper and run an article in your local place that, look what this kid is doing, you start to go, oh, okay. And plus, Sandy Duncan, God love her, one of the most talented women, you know, that hit the stage. Mm-hmm. She was a big deal. Remember, she did the old TV series.
Oh, no, she was a big deal.
And all of that. So she was a star. And there I was, you know, sharing the stage with her. You know, it didn't seem weird.
No, it just seemed right.
Yeah.
Seemed right.
I never knew that I'd still at this, at 116 years old, I would still be making a living.
So that's another question I have. I have two. One, do you remember your parents' reaction to any of this?
They were always very supportive,
right, whatever.
Encouraging, and I thank them for that.
God bless them.
I thank them for that.
Yeah, that's the other piece.
They didn't steer me in one way. They didn't say, although they did say, this is an unstable business. And again, a good teacher will be honest, and I hope that the kids get that these days, whoever, whenever they start, wherever they are, that it's a difficult way to make a living, and you don't make a living. Ultimately, you just kind of piece together an existence, and you live sometimes check to mouth to hand to store to friends to bartenders so it was told me this is difficult, but it just felt good, and I just, as I was growing up,
is the other question I have. So at 11, this is fun, but you're not saying to yourself, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
I wasn't saying I was.
You weren't. No, you were just sort of writing it.
Yeah, I was writing that.
Then where did you write it next?
Well, you know, again, I was trapped in Cincinnati. I did go to New York a couple of times because I got an agent. There was a child agent.
Already?
Yeah, that got involved. And there were a couple of auditions. Not a lot, though, because, of course, it meant traveling. If I had been in New York City.
Right.
You know, then it would be different because you go to auditions every day. You see kids
always.
But I was tracked somewhat in Ohio. So I just kind of went through this, you know, through my high school, which was a really creative place run by really creative, smart people at a time when, you know, it wasn't being done
that time,
you know. Because you were supposed to be, I'm a good Jewish boy.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. You don't have to put two and two and two together. You're going to be a lawyer. You're going to be a financial analyst, a doctor. Come on, a dentist.
That's right.
I'm still great best friends with my best friend who I was bar mitzvahed with. We're still great, great friends and talk every few weeks. And he's a dentist. And his dad was a dentist. And his dad's dad was a dentist. So that's their thing. I didn't inherit a bloodline of a career through my dad.
Right.
He wasn't. He was. I don't really know what he did. He got through and he was a great parent, and like I said, supportive and encouraging, but I didn't inherit a career that way, so for some reason I found, or it, theater found me.
Clearly it did.
I give it up to the universe on that one.
Oh, there's no question about it.
I think it could have been something or anything, you know how we are, you know, when you're young, you're excited about life, and you know, whatever turns you on, but this really turned me on. And again, there is, in high school, it was a really wonderfully concentrated, beautiful place with other really talented people. A lot of my friends from high school are still working in the business.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness for the Facebook. We'll get to that whenever. That it can keep you connected to people from your youth.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was just a great place to go to school and graduate.
Okay, so by the time you graduated,
had
you decided this was a career?
Yeah, of course. By the time I got to be a senior, I had lots of show experience just because of the school. Being a creative performing arts, we were always doing plays, Shakespeare, musicals, always doing something, and different forms of the art form too. So I was, you know, well-rounded for 17 years old.
So what did you do?
Well, I started auditioning for colleges, for universities,
mm-hmm.
and I was clearly going to audition for some arts, you know, university.
Right.
And I put my application out a few places. Again, Cincinnati, I don't know if you're familiar with the training institutions, like with the universities, but CCM, College Conservatory of Music in Cincinnati, was the top training place for musical theater, and still is one of the top schools.
Mm-hmm.
But back then it was the number one school, maybe close to Carnegie. So I auditioned for Carnegie, I auditioned for CCM, I was accepted, and also with Southern Methodist. I don't know why I auditioned for Southern Methodist. SMU in Dallas, I don't know why I did. There was a girl in my high school class, and we played opposite each other in a production of Harvey, and we had a great little scene, and we decided to audition for SMU. We both got in, she went. And I went to the Carnegie audition and got accepted, and I went up there, and they even said to me, why are you interested in our school when CCM is right in your backyard? And there was a man running CCM at the time who started that program, whose name was Worth Gardner. All hail, bow down. He started that program and put it on the map, and he was a mentor to anyone who went there. And it made sense to go study with him, and it was also the most competitive place. And it was home.
So you did?
I went there. I went to CCM and got involved in their musical theater program there. And was very, very happy there. I had great friends. Always very, challenging to keep up. Challenge yourself vocally. Because it was a very, really good singers. Really good singers. So I was pretty much a singer, actor. Mm-hmm. I was a singing actor, I guess, at that point in my life. And then I got through that. And my graduating year at CCM was my fourth year. The university started an acting program. They brought in a guy from Actors Theater of Louisville, which we all know is, through history, one of the, was a very prestigious new play theater. So they brought this guy to start this acting program at CCM, but there were no students. So they took the senior class of the musical theater, and they said, here's your class. Mm-hmm. And this was great because we were going to get to study with this Actors Theater of Louisville guy. And we took his acting class, and it was very new to us, because it was he who had his own ideas about what theater was, which were really different, or new, I should say, from what we had been doing up to that point. He said to me, he was like, Howie, I think you're a good actor. Had you ever thought about pursuing out past this, maybe a master's or some sort of non-musical? He said, I think you're a really good actor. And I was like, what? You're crazy. And he issued, sort of threw down a challenge.
Yet again.
He threw down a challenge to me, and I like challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And he encouraged me to audition. I said, well, at that point, I'm ready to move to New York City and be on Broadway.
Yeah, right.
Singing and dancing was, of course, ultimately the dream for my friends and myself. But I took this challenge, and I said, well, there's two schools. What are the best schools? What are the best schools in the country? Juilliard and Yale. That was sort of a no-brainer. I said, well, I'll audition for those two, because if I'm going to invest more time of my life, I want it to count.
Right,
I want to have some weight. And I missed out on the Yale audition for whatever reason, but I was able to get the application in for Juilliard, and you had to do all the, it was a tough audition process, but I prepared a Shakespeare, and I prepared this, and got the paperwork, and I flew my tuchus to New York City for this Juilliard audition.
Right.
And there, I didn't know what I was doing there. I really didn't know. It was just a challenge that had been issued, and I was just going to follow it through. And there were 500 people in my section, which was a Saturday at 9 in the morning. There was a morning session. There was an afternoon session. It was Juilliard. There were 5 days there, and in Chicago, and in San Francisco, and how they do it. And I'm like, this is crazy. This is a crowd scene. I'm not really into the whole experience. It just seemed very impersonal. There was a group warm-up where we're pushing a big ball through Jell-O. stuff like this. And I'm like, what is this? This is craziness. I just want to sing and dance. But I'm here. I'm going to do my Shakespeare, and I'm going to do my contemporary monologue.
And I'll push this
like
ball.
So this was part of the warm-up.
Right.
And then they split the group. They split all 500 people into these smaller. There's five rooms going on at one time, each room with three of the faculty. And it got to be, finally, hours later, my turn. I'm waiting to go into the studio, kind of like the studio we're in right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the girl, and I'm still friends with this girl as well. I said, how many people, they do a callback situation for Juilliard because it's just the numbers.
Right.
I said, how many people do they call back? And I'm thinking, I don't know why, Lynn, I'm thinking 25, 30 people. And I didn't have any idea. She said, oh, yesterday they called back two. And I was like,
oh my God, I flew here
so I can, you know, it just seemed like more of a joke to me. And I said to myself, and this was the changing point. And I, again, it was a thought that I had, and I don't know why I had that thought, but I said to myself, because they give you time limits. This monologue should not be more than a minute. This monologue should not be more than a minute. And you get a little obsessed with timing, because, you know, that's what they tell you.
Right, you
have a 3-minute limit, and you have to squeeze this in. So, you know, you actually would have the stopwatch. Timing, you know, have your friend.
Right.
I'm going to do my speeches, and you can stop me.
Right.
Ooh, you're over. You got to cut something. You have to do it. And I thought, this is fakacht. Can I say that?
Yes, of course. Can I say fakacht? Yes, absolutely.
And I said to myself, I flew all the way here, and there's all these people, and this is craziness. I'm going to take my time.
Oh.
And I don't care.
Right.
They can cut me off.
Right.
But I was a little angry.
Yes, I was a little angry.
And I said, I'm going to really just take my time. This is ridiculous. And I did. I got in, I went in, I started my monologue, and I'm thinking the whole time, this was a personal thing. I was like, I'm going to go slow.
Right.
I'm going to go slow. And you know what? That's the best thing I did, because those monologues became a new experience for me. I do remember it was a different thing.
And you mean doing it?
Yeah, doing it. And going slow.
Yes.
And going slow.
Yeah. You found something in yourself.
I found something in myself, in the monologues,
yeah.
In the characters, in the speech. And to make a long story even longer, because I know I'm talking a lot.
No, you're not talking too much.
Well, you'll splice. You'll edit.
Yeah, right, don't worry.
This guy talks too much. But it's a good story in that there's something about taking your time that I learned. And
there's something about being true to yourself.
There is always, always. Shakespeare knows.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of that morning session, they post a callback list.
Right.
Generally, there's 4 names or 5 names.
Right.
And people crowded around.
Oh, yeah,
this
yeah.
is ridiculous.
Right.
And I did not fight to get to the front, but I've made some friends.
Yes, right.
In the hours of waiting.
Right.
And this girl who I'd been talking to said, you're up there. You're up there. So I got a call back. I said, what? This is crazy. This is crazy. I never expected it. I didn't. It just caught me off guard, and I had to come back later in the day. When the callback experience was, I enjoyed it. I knew that I was onto something.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. You do the callbacks for the entire faculty. They line them up theater style.
So you do the same things?
Same thing. I did the same things. They actually asked. They asked you questions. You know, just, I guess, to get a feel, I don't know what they're shopping for. I mean, I know now because I got accepted.
Right.
So I ended up getting accepted to the Juilliard Drama Division.
Amazing.
Much to the surprise of myself, more than anybody else.
That's right.
More than anybody else. Right. But I did have an acting teacher in Cincinnati at the time, not the one that encouraged me, but another woman. And she was like, well, you know, this is really not your genre. And she was not, as I did my monologues for her prior to going, and she didn't support me. And said, I don't really know if this is your path. And I was like, okay, well, maybe it's not. But so not all teachers can be.
Well, no, the trick, actually the point that I try and make is they can be on both sides.
Yeah.
They can be terrifically encouraging as several of your teachers were.
Yeah.
And they can be terrifically discouraging and throw somebody's whole life out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The point I'm actually trying to make is that they have a lot of power.
Yeah, they do.
And they can do one or the other.
And when you're young, I don't want to say fragile, but you do listen to everything, and you do overanalyze. And as an artist, we have to be sensitive, and we are sensitive, emotional people, then it hurts more, or it's joyous,
yes.
or it's more of everything.
Yes, oh, I think that's right. I think
so,
that's right.
And again, that challenge became much more of a challenge. So again, you know, I got accepted, and that became, so I moved.
Wait. Yeah. I'm just curious. The thing you said about when you did the monologue the way you wanted to do it, taking your time, that you discovered something in yourself. So what I heard, you tell me if I'm all wrong here, what I heard was that at that moment, the work of acting captured you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Is that right?
Yeah, you're right on.
Yeah.
You're right on. It was a new experience.
Right.
And I don't know what else to say about it.
No, it's that there are moments when something becomes really clear to us.
Yeah.
You know,
it became less presentational to me.
Yes.
And I didn't really know about what presentational even meant, but I knew that in the callback situation, and this is, I'm sitting there in front of Michael Kahn, mm-hmm. you know, all these people who started this Juilliard drama program, you know, and I got then where I was and who I was and what I was trying to do.
Yeah, it's yeah. not just, I'm paraphrasing and you have to tell me if I'm wrong, and I don't care if I'm wrong,
mm-hmm.
but it's not just, look at me, aren't I clever? It's something deeply connected to you that you're doing. Is this not correct?
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And especially at Juilliard. And people say, oh, wow, you went to Juilliard.
Yeah.
That must have been cool. And I was like, you know what? They taught me how to act.
Yeah.
They really, really did. Because I did not know how to act going in.
No, but they saw it in you.
They saw something. I admit, I embrace. They saw something in me that went, oh, we like this guy. Or he. I mean, and back then, they were casting very much. I hate using that word, casting. Because we use it every day, and it's the word that, you know, drives you crazy. But they were casting a repertory company.
Yes. So they were looking for types.
They, I think, were looking for types, because you could almost track yourself, you know, in the groups ahead of you. But, it, you know, just a group of people that complemented each other somehow.
Right.
And it was. It was truly to the experience of my lifetime. And not everyone likes it. It was difficult.
But you like a challenge.
I like a challenge, and I survived it. They used to do cuts. They used to do cuts after your second year. So we started with 26 people, I think, and then we only graduated 17 people. So they let people go. I made it through. I was learning how to act, and I thank them for that. They were great teachers. But also, what I learned there is that my friends, the other people in my class, were my teachers. Because I had never been with people like this. I'd been a song and a dance man, which is great, and you can put on your tap shoes and you can put on your leg warmers back then, and you'll go to a dance con, you can sing, you can belt your high G's and your low, and you get your baritone going, and you learn that song and that style, you know, but this, for me, I knew nothing about acting, and I learned how to act, so, and I thank my friends, because it's so much about imagination and about letting yourself try and live outside of your brain, and I'd never done that before, and I was seeing other people doing it in class with me, and I was like, you got to keep up, and you're doing this thing with masks, and then, of course, the speech, there was a lot of speech work, and a lot of voice, not singing voice, but your speaking voice, which, bringing us back to this role I'm playing,
yeah.
I have to really use all that stuff, because it says in the script, well, He bellows, loud mouth.
I was wondering how you managed not to lose your voice.
I've had no problems at all.
I'm so impressed.
I've had no trouble, even on two show days. It is a lot of screaming. But I've tried to find the parts of the play where an angry man, where the anger isn't always just
screaming,
it's
right.
not at a 10.
Right.
The intensity is a 10, but it's really, and that was, you know, from the help of the director and the writer. You know, you got to find places to make it
to bring
an intense anger,
right.
where it's not just always, you know, just
screaming,
just loud mouth screaming, something
right,
like that.
Right, so, right, right.
But all that training, it was a great place, and
it taught
me a lot, and it put me in New York City.
Yes.
There I was finally in New York City
yes.
as an actor.
Okay, I want to keep up with. I mean, I want to go on with that, but another point that I want to make is that we can find things about ourselves at various different times in our lives that we didn't actually know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it sounds like you found. That you found the actor. You knew you had a song and dance guy. You didn't know you had the capacity
mm-hmm.
to bring out other people in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But you found that then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just like to make that point because lots of people think that life is over at, you know, 10, at 18, at 22, at 33, at 55, and I don't think it ever is. I think there's always the capacity to.
I think you're right. I'd like to think that, and I can honestly say that at my age, I'm still learning about who I am now as an actor. And again, here we go back to the business, how we as actors now, we have to slot ourselves in. It's not how we feel about ourselves. It's how the casting directors,
yeah.
it's how the agents, how they see us. This is not the first time I auditioned for Florida Studio Theater. Richard Hopkins has been bringing me in for auditions for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And I treat all my auditions very seriously. I believe that success comes in preparation. Maybe it's because I went to school for so long, but I'm an overly prepared guy. For every audition, I'll lose sleep.
Wow.
I will stay awake in order to prepare auditions. I've gone through periods in my life where I had 5 sets of sides, and I'll treat all of them. I remember one, I was in for one, it was a play, for a casting director that, again, like Richard, had been loyal to me, giving me opportunity to come in and audition for things. And he was a nice guy, and he would call me in for plays and musicals, and he had given me this appointment. It was for a new play. I had so many auditions going on, there wasn't enough time in the day to prepare everything. And it was the night before this audition, I thought, I'm going to flop for Rich Cole. And I don't want to flop for Rich Cole. Mm-hmm. And I stayed up. There were 3 scenes. You had to pick 2 of the 3 to prepare. Lynn, I stayed up all night. I ended up booking that job, which, again, surprised me. But you have to be prepared, 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 prepared. So, I mean, Richard's been loyal to me. I usually can get a callback from him before this audition for Tom Jones. I work for Disney Cruise Lines. I'm going back as soon as we close Tom Jones. I love it.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
I love being an old guy and going to hang out with Mickey Mouse. I love it. This is a great experience. It's a new play written by a really funny, funny, funny man. And, you know, so to book this one was great. And I love being in Sarasota and I love doing this play. I did do a Broadway show for 5 years.
What?
I did Miss Saigon.
Oh, my God.
Which was a huge hit.
Yes.
Mega musical.
A huge
hit. You know, during the 90s when all of those Cameron Mackintosh shows. And I was a hard worker, you know, in all my auditions. So once I graduated from Juilliard, you know, with this degree,
right.
You know, you basically they just throw you out the door anyway. Right. I mean, here's your degree, and it looks beautiful on my wall.
Right.
There you are, $100,000 in debt, with a Juilliard degree, feeling great.
Yes, right.
And you're ready to star, and you're ready to star in movies.
Yes,
and do theater, and do, you know, do all this stuff. Yeah, I got a great agent, a great human being. I'm still with him.
Wow.
He knows my talent better than I know my talent. Yeah. He sends me in for auditions. I'm like, Bill, I'm really? He's like, you can do that. And he really is a great agent. See, he thinks outside the box. He knows, like I said, he knows things that I, shows that I've, jobs that I've gotten that I thought, this is not me. He's like, just go. And I go. I love auditioning. Most actors hate it.
No, you know, but what's so interesting about your life for me is that there have been people pretty much all along saying, you can do that. You know, and you have been open to all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so and then, for however many, 24 years, you have this career, right?
Yeah,
and you get as much work as you can get.
I just do auditions.
And you go, and that's your life.
I do auditions.
That's your life.
I'm
right?
an actor who gets auditions, and you have to become, or they, it's all about the casting director now, and everything's about the casting director. And an agent is not a magician. But I try and put my work and efforts and energy into my auditions.
Yeah,
well, that's what I do. I'll take 3 pages of dialogue and figure it out, and just figure it out and try it different ways in my apartment. I mean, I push the furniture out of the way, but I like auditioning. It's fun. It's a performance. It's a performance element, basically.
Right.
You're in front of whoever's behind the table. One person. I've been in for auditions and had multiple callbacks for Broadway shows, where there's 30 people behind the table. Mm-hmm. I love it. You get to wear what you want to wear. Mm-hmm. Generally, if it's a singing thing, you'll sing something from your book. They call it your book, your repertoire, your folder, whatever it is. And they give you material now, of course. But I enjoy it. I like it.
You're an actor.
That's what I do.
That's right.
That's
really
an actor. It's what
and
I
whenever
do.
You get a chance to do it, you do it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. So I start auditioning, and my life has not changed.
No.
When this finishes, and like I have this Disney thing, which this actually at my tender young age, when I went in for this, and actually my agent called me and said, you know, we don't do cruise ships generally, we don't submit on cruise ships, but the deal looks really sweet for this. And Disney was setting up a new form of contract for a man of a certain age to come in for a shorter period of time to play adult roles, you know, in their book of shows that they do on the ships. And one ship, but I'm in 3 shows. Wonderfully crafted, well thought out shows. I was completely blown away with the whole process of Disney. And I'd never worked for Disney. and didn't go there as a child. But here I was, and there's a 1,500-seat gorgeous theater on this ship that was state-of-the-art. That the production values, obviously, are just wonderful and creative. And it was a great, great job. So, again, to be hanging out and high-fiving Mickey.
Yeah.
And singing some of these songs. And, again, what a great, you know, songbook of material they have.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great job. And I'm going to go back
That's
to it.
Wonderful.
I'm going back for 6 weeks. So I'm going to basically, I've got a job in the Caribbean.
Right.
For six
this
weeks.
6 weeks, right.
Doing some shows on a ship. But no, life is good. I'm generally a pretty happy guy anyway.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about Tom Jones.
Oh, okay, yeah. It's an ensemble piece, which, mm-hmm. again, I like, because I like sharing the stage. We all play multiple roles.
Yes, you do.
Because there's
all
a thousand.
This, right, there's all this costume changing.
Yeah, we do. There's a lot of fast changes,
ooh.
Which now that we've been doing the show for about 3 weeks, you know, fast changes, you think, oh my God, I'm never going to make that change.
Mm-hmm.
And in dress rehearsal, I don't know when you saw the show.
I saw it opening night.
You saw opening night.
Mm-hmm.
In dress rehearsal, there was a change that I was involved in. I didn't make it. I came on, the thing, the hat was falling off, the wig was on backwards. I forgot the prop because the vest was snapped incorrectly.
Oy.
And it just, I didn't make it.
Right.
I didn't make the change, and
but
I was
you did
late.
On my, but you did on opening night.
Yeah, we got it down.
Yeah,
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 but, you know,
right.
Another half hour, just like this. It's very
right,
specific
right,
what
right.
comes off.
The what shoe, goes on, right.
The shoes, the pants go over, the guy holds the vest and the coat at mm-hmm. the same time, so you slip
yes,
in.
Yes, yes, yes.
As he takes that, she goes that. The wig gets replaced. It's really fun that way.
Right.
And fast changes now are not that fast.
No.
They don't seem fast.
No.
But it's an ensemble piece. We're telling a, you know, the book is, I think, 1,000 pages.
Mm.
You're condensing the writer. Mark Brown is a specialist.
Yes, he is.
At minimalizing these ideas. You know,
right.
he did, of course, the Around the World in 80 Days, which
yeah.
he is, I hope his grandkids have college paid for
I'm
from
sure
the success
they do.
Of that
I'm
play.
Sure they do. I just saw it at St. Pete.
Oh, okay, you saw that production. I heard mm-hmm. it was wonderful.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah, he's
oh,
just
my
highly
God.
Creative mm-hmm. and has takes theatrics
mm-hmm.
and just stretches the rules,
mm-hmm.
which is it's brave and funny.
It is funny.
And it's funny. It's like, I'm just talking to somebody about it today on the phone. I was like, it's play. It's like, it's kind of borscht belty.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Because it's Jewish. Because, you know, he's
yeah.
a Jewish writer.
Right.
And I'm a Jew.
Yeah, right.
And I remember when I got the material, the audition material, I was like, no, this is funny.
Mm-hmm.
This is fast. It's a very fast-paced show,
oh
which
God.
I like. And it's farcical and it's British. So it's like, British.
British Jewish.
British Jewish.
We're Jewish.
We're going to try and make up a word. That's good. But it's fast-paced, so you really have to think on your feet. And
I love
doing comedy. I've had a lot of success doing comedies. I had a great run. I always like to plug things from the past because you can go to iTunes. How about this?
Yes.
Self-promotion.
Yes.
There's a wonderful new musical. It was an off-Broadway musical called Silence, the
mm-hmm.
musical. Have you heard of that?
I have.
It was a music. It's a musical version of Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, that's right.
That we, a group of people, did in the Fringe Festival in New York City in
mm-hmm.
2005. No money. Rehearsed this thing in the smallest un-air-conditioned studio with a really great director and a really great writer named Hunter Bell. Chris Catelli was the director. Tony Award-winning Chris Catelli is wonderful. They're both smart. They're all smart people, but we did this crazy, fringy production of Silence of the Lambs, the musical. The only movie that should never be a musical.
Right, that's right.
And these people put it together, the writing team of two guys in L.A., and we put the scene together. 6 years later, we came back to the production. They found a producer. 6 years,
oh,
this
yeah,
thing was
crazy.
Just idle. Nothing, you know. And we would see each other, the cast, we'd see each other in New York. What about that great show we did together? It's like, oh, that was so much fun. Wouldn't it be great if... And then finally it did. So I spent 2 years off-Broadway doing the Silence of the Lambs. A very, very funny show. So comedy has been... It's difficult to do comedy,
yes,
too.
Yes, it is.
People think, you know, that maybe Raisin in the Sun or the importance of being earnest is going to be harder. But to really... No,
because it's all about timing. And you're also dependent on everybody else's timing.
Yeah, it's true. And the audience is involved, too, at
that's
that point.
Right.
Because
that's
we
right.
have different experiences every performance with a live crowd.
That's right.
Again, the beauty of the art form.
Yes.
You know, TV, you're going to do it 100 times, and you take the best one. Here, it goes like it goes. If you stumble on a word, you stumble on a word.
That's right.
You know?
And then the audience either gives it to you or they don't, and then you have to do what you do with that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but Tom Jones has been... we rarely get to do a new play
mm-hmm.
with the playwright in the room. We're the first to do it.
Right.
And
is he still here?
No, he took off like opening night. Yeah. Generally, people leave us alone.
Yes, they do.
Finally.
Right, the author and the director.
The author and the director, they go, bye.
Right.
No, that's okay, we're waving. We're like,
yeah, right.
Don't let the door hit you or the good Lord split you.
Yeah.
You know, no, we want ownership. And, you know, you know, theater is definitely a collaborative event. And we're a part of it, and everybody does it differently.
Right.
You know, everybody does theater. Every director is different, every actor is different, set designers, everybody does it. So it's how you, like, shape the thing. But I think we've done really well with Tom Jones.
I do, too. I do, too.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes, I did. How long is it running?
We run until June the 1st, May 31st, I think maybe is the closing date.
Okay.
I hope people come to see it. Yeah, it's quick and painless.
Yes, it is.
It's not
it is. That's exactly what I'm looking at. No.
You're going to come in and you're going to sit and enjoy it. And the Sarasota audiences are so supportive.
I know.
And the subscription base, I guess, here is, you know, everyone talks about, we have a built-in audience, which, again, we're never playing to half house.
No.
Which is good. So we know that the theater's basically full. But come anyway. Form a line outside.
Right. Get a ticket.
Get a ticket.
Can come to FST. You can come on the night. And then of the performance, and because sometimes people don't show up, and then they seat
people who
came.
Well, you're not going to read the novel because it's 1,000 pages.
Yes, right.
You're not going to read the book.
No,
so come see it in 2 hours.
Right.
Have a glass of wine.
Right.
You know, see me. Say hi after the show if you want. We love it. We're a really happy group of people because the writing is so joyous and so funny.
And everybody's having such a good time.
Everyone's having so much fun on stage. And we, you know, you look at each other and it's it's over before you know it.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the greatest jobs that way, you know?
Okay, I have one more question.
Yes, my love.
Okay, having spent a life, and you have spent a life performing.
Yeah.
What would you say about it, about spending a life, giving a life to performance?
Why didn't I go to dental school? I don't know. Then it's hard to evaluate or assess. As I've gotten older, and I'm still doing it, I'm obviously a different man now than I was at 11 years old when I first joined the union.
Right.
I do ask myself how much longer I want to do it, how much longer it's going to allow me to do it. I always feel lucky to have worked as much as I have and continue to work, you know, keep the evil spirits away, because I don't know what else to do. I don't have any other skills. I'm an actor.
Yes.
That's what we're talking about. I've spent my life doing it, and I graciously accept more work and more challenges. It's tough to make a living.
It's tough to make a living.
It's just hard to make a living, and the rent does not go down.
No.
Any?
No.
I don't play the lottery. Maybe I should. You know, a dollar and a dream. A dollar and a dream, I should probably start the scratch-offs. So I don't know. I don't...
It's all right. It's okay.
I'm doing it. I've always called myself like a trench. I'm in the trenches, you know. I've worked. I've had a Broadway experience. I've had a couple off-Broadway experiences. Film TV has never really embraced me. I've tried a few times. And I get good feedback, but I just haven't gotten those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So I get the theater jobs, and I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
It absolutely answers my question.
I don't know what else to do. Except I'm going to go home after this job, after the next job, and wait for the phone to ring.
Yes.
That's what we do.
Yes.
We wait for the phone to ring, and then we get the material, and then we show up.
It's
clean shirts.
Clean shirts.
clean face, clean shirt, you know, and keep going. Keep going, but thank you for. I usually hate talking about myself, but I'm not a self-promotional actor.
No.
I don't have a web page.
No.
I don't have any YouTube clips. I don't. You know. I sort of let my work speak for itself. So thank you for making me talk about myself.
Maybe.
And you're very open, and you ask good questions too.
Well,
so.
You're very charming, and you have a lot of good things to say. So thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. My pleasure.
I'm an actor. That's what I do. When someone says these words, then what you know is that they are speaking from their deepest self. They are telling you this is who they are. Even when, as Howie points out, it's not that easy. This comes up in so many of the interviews that I do, because I only interview people who make their living or their life with an art, and we don't make it easy for people to give their lives to an art in this culture. We make it very difficult. And so you hear that they do it anyway. They do it when it's not financially rewarding. They do it when it's difficult to get work. They do it when people don't like their work. They do it when it's not easy because it is who they are. And when they do it, and they can do it, you know, I mean, and when they do it, as you heard Howie, it's the joy of their life. They're alive when they do this work, when they are this art. And so you heard it over and over again as he talked about the work that he has done and the work that he is doing. When he talked about Tom Jones and what a pleasure and a joy it is. When he talked about how hard he works to prepare for auditions. How much of himself he gives to that. How he loves auditions because it's an opportunity to perform. And that's what he is, a performer. And so it is my hope, as always, when you listen to every one of these interviews, that when you listen to Howie, you heard that sparkle. You heard that pleasure that comes from being who you really are. And that it's worth the price. So, if, as you were listening to Howie, perhaps you were reminded of something that you had wanted to do or something that you had been as a child that brought ridicule or punishment even, and you'd like to try and get that back, it's not too late. I try and make that point in Howie's interview that it wasn't until he was 21, which may not seem very late to you, but it is late for a lot of actors, that he really discovered the actor inside of himself. And as he said, he's still discovering now, as a man of a certain age. It's not too late to discover yourself. If you want more information about that, you can, of course, go up to my website, thelynnshow.com. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. And as always, I hope that you got something that you can use from this show. You were, as I said, inspired or triggered, or you had a memory from your childhood that you want to pursue, or maybe you were just tickled how he's a funny guy. We had such a good time. Maybe you just found yourself laughing. Maybe you learned something that you didn't know. Maybe you were intrigued. Whatever it is, I hope that you got something that will bring you back, because I will be here next week, same time, same station, and as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't